Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Marigold, all the chips in B.C. It is Saturday, the 23rd day of May, Anno Domini 2026, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to bring you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, get off shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. Google I.O., their annual developers event, was this week. As you can well imagine, the main, pretty much only, topic was how they're cramming AI into everything even more than it already was.
Whether you want it or not.
Whether you want it or not. They should call it Google A.I.O. for artificial intelligence only. This isn't new, since over the last few years, the main focus of Google A.I.O. has been AI. Google says 900 million people use its Gemini assistant, and that people have generated more than 50 billion images with Gemini. Google's goal for 2026 is to put AI agents at the forefront of all its biggest services, Search, Gmail, YouTube, Docs, and the Chrome browser. In a demo briefing the day before I.O., Google and Alphabet CEO Sundar Pichai said that the company is in a period of hyper-progress with its AI efforts, but acknowledged that this is the part of that cycle where people want to see real value in the products they use on a day-to-day basis. No kidding. These search agents are also being integrated more deeply across Google's platform. In March, Google released Ask Maps, which lets users ask questions on maps like you would interact with a chatbot, because that's what I really want to do while I'm driving. Google also introduced two new major AI model updates, Gemini 3.5 and Gemini 3.5 Flash, a pared-down but more affordable version of 3.5 Pro. Both will be available immediately in Google Search and the Gemini app. In a new feature called Docs Live, you can describe with your voice, wow, what you want to write. An agent will dictate your words, generate text, pull in citations from the web, and aim to turn your stream of consciousness wishes into a coherent document. Google also announced Gemini Omni, an AI video generator akin to Sora 2. That was OpenAI's generator that let you deep fake yourself, but was eventually killed by the company. Gemini Spark is Google's answer to OpenClaw, the viral AI-powered helper bot that could be used to help with real-life needs like buying groceries or researching vacation options. And all you have to do is give it access to your credit card and banking info. Oh, and did I mention that almost all of these are subscription-only? Yeah. There are two types of Google Intelligent Eyewear, one set of products with audio-only features, and another product type that has a small display window incorporated into the lenses. The company is creating these in partnership with Samsung for the tech and a small group of eyewear companies for the style to build out the Android XR platform. But don't call them smart glasses. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google I.O. 2026. And your choices are, great, AI and everything. This should be interesting. I'll give it a try. I wouldn't pay for it. And I'm sick of AI. So far, we've got 29 votes, and in a surprise to no one, I'm sick of AI is ahead of the pack by more than half, followed by I wouldn't pay for it. And, of course, if you would like to vote in the poll, it's real easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And you can vote in the poll there. And then, of course, you can give us a call on that or dang near anything else at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415. We're in the AI bubble. AI is the new hotness right now, and AI is everything. Never mind that nobody is making money on AI. It's costing every company billions of dollars. It's using all of the potable water on Earth and generating more heat than anything else you can think of. But God forbid, we can't ask your AI pal, how am I doing today? And don't think that isn't out there. That's
oh, for sure.
Your plastic pal who's fun to be with?
Yeah, exactly.
With a genuine people personality.
Yep.
Sounds ghastly.
Yeah.
It is.
So we're eerie. Seeing it in more and more things. It's going to be in every one of these devices. Right now, if you go to Google Docs, you'll see at the bottom of the panel the little starburst that is Gemini, and you can click on that to get help with things, and you'll be able to talk to it and do all this stuff. It annoys me because it's right in the middle of the page, the bottom of the page, but it's right there, and I don't like that.
No way to turn it off?
No. Microsoft's Copilot was worse, and they finally now have said that you'll be able to move it off to the side panel, which I would love to do with the one at the bottom of Google Docs. And all of the, you know, Google Docs and Sheets and the presentation thing and all of it.
The whole package.
Yeah. It's AI and everything. And, you know, it started a couple of years ago when Microsoft fired all of their quality assurance people and QA is being done by AI. And we see how bad that is when every single month there are problems with the monthly update, Patch Tuesday.
In other words, status quo.
Right. And we're seeing that, you know, people, cases are getting thrown out of court because some clerk somewhere used AI to summarize, to put a case together, and the AI hallucinated and made up cases, made up citations. And somebody who actually knows the law caught that.
Cool.
I just read a story about a grandma in Tennessee got extradited to North Dakota to face bank robbery charges because facial recognition caught her. It wasn't her.
Yeah.
You think?
She said she'd never even been to North Dakota, never left Tennessee. She was in jail for 4 months before they extradited her. And in Fargo, North Dakota, she was in jail for a couple of months before someone finally looked at her alibi and proved that she was in Tennessee on the day in question. And so they released her from jail on Christmas Eve.
Cool, of course.
In Fargo, North Dakota, with no money, no luggage, nothing, just the clothes on her back that she was extradited with.
Out you go, bye-bye.
Yep.
Yeah,
and she was able to find a passerby and get to a shelter for the evening.
Unbelievable!
And no one from the police has apologized yet.
Hopefully she's suing.
Yeah, we're waiting for the big lawsuit.
Yeah,
I would hope the lawyers are lined
wrongful up wrongful arrest.
Yeah, and incarceration.
Yeah,
and
in jail.
Yeah, because the AI identified her, but investigation. It's the trope you see on cop shows all the time. We caught the guy. We know. No, you don't.
You don't.
Yeah.
Well, I joked. Well, I got those of you who watch us on YouTube may have noticed I've trimmed my beard. It was hanging down. To
and
my
your hair. Frame, and you got a haircut.
And I got a haircut. My wife doesn't like the haircut. She doesn't mind the beard trim, but she doesn't like the haircut.
Really?
Yeah. She likes my hair longer. I asked for it to be over my ears. Apparently, my barber heard above my ears. That's all right. It'll grow out. Well, it's not. You know, it's not like lumber.
Yeah, it is over your ear.
Yeah,
it's not covering your ear.
That's my mistake. Yeah. It'll grow out again. I'm not upset in any way, or worried, or bothered.
Just takes longer at our age.
But I joked with the barber, a stylist, whatever they call themselves now, who did it. I said, Windows Hello isn't going to recognize me. And you know what?
It doesn't.
It doesn't. It doesn't recognize me anymore. That just amuses me. I've got one Windows machine that I use for checking my answers when I do my Ask Nick newsletter. And it uses Windows Hello, and it doesn't know who I am anymore.
I just found out
find that funny?
Cool.
All right, we should probably head to the phones. Our first caller is Bill from Greece, New York. What's up, Bill?
Good morning.
Hi.
I hate to say this, but AI is not all bad. Somebody used AI to write a script that's on GitHub, and now you can use Adobe through Wine in Linux.
Yeah, there are legitimate uses for AI. You just can't trust every even for this new vibe coding thing. You can't trust the AI got it right.
Right. Using AI is not a bad thing.
Just double checking.
Not checking it is a bad thing. That's where the bad comes in.
Yeah, but the big thing here is that people are always complaining, oh, I can't go to Linux because I need to use Photoshop. Now they can't use that excuse.
Right. That's exactly right.
True.
That's exactly right. And AI made that possible, and I get that. I've used AI to code stuff myself. I had written a program that almost worked, and I just gave it to AI and said, here's this program. This is what doesn't work. Fix it. And it did.
Ooh.
And then I said, okay, make it multi-threaded. And it did. But I gave it the original program, and I tested the living patoot out of it once I got it back. And I found some mistakes, and it fixed the mistakes. But it's
only as good as its input. And the input is from other individuals. That's what people don't realize. It's not some magic up in the clouds that come up with all this information that you get when you ask it to gather all of it. It's other people's input, and it can be wrong.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to double check what it's doing for you or the answer that you're getting. Do not rely on it for all, everything is correct. It's rock solid. Everything else, it's just not there.
So there's two things. One is, you're right. A lot of what AI is trained on is wrong to begin with, and it learns the wrong thing.
Yep.
The second thing is, AI will not say I don't know. It will make up an answer before it will say I don't have an answer.
Yep.
And you have to check all that stuff. But you're absolutely right, Bill. The things that AI does well, it does very, very well.
And I'm on this realm. Maybe people don't realize this, but Lightroom, for quite a while now, you can use that in Linux too.
Yep.
Through Wine. So both Lightroom and Photoshop, people can use in Linux. So those are no longer things to tell them to stop. I can't go to Linux.
Right.
And on a sadder note, Pythos, which is a Pandora client, no longer works. I think that Pandora used the new API, and Pythos hasn't been maintained for years, so I think Pythos is gone.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love Pythos. I used it for the longest time. It was great. It's too bad.
Pandora without commercials.
Right.
Okay, you guys have a good day, and I will listen to the rest of your show.
All right, thanks, you too. And don't forget about Darktable. You should take a look at that as well. It does a lot of what both Darktable, what both Lightroom and Adobe do. So at least you can take a look at that, and that's free on Linux as well. So if you don't like it, it's free. All you've wasted is a little time. But Linux becomes more and more capable, and there are fewer and fewer things that don't work under Linux in some form or another. So if that's what's been holding you back.
Yeah. The general populace doesn't know anything about Linux. They go to the store, they see a Windows machine, and they buy it.
Right.
Even if that same store has Macs next to it. Yeah.
Well, two things. At least with Macs, there's a Mac there.
Yeah.
Linux, you can't even buy in a store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can get it through Dell online if you know where to look. You can buy it from System 76 and a couple of other places. But 99% of non-Mac sold are Windows machines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to find Linux. And you're right. At least you see a Mac there. Whether or not you think, oh, I could use that, is a separate... Although
the pretty colors are getting people now with the Neo.
Well, the Neo is selling like gangbusters.
Yeah, there have been several articles in the Mac news press. Apple doesn't have to advertise it because all the Windows companies are advertising it.
Yeah.
Look, this PC is better because it can run Office on a student discount for free. You can do the same thing on a Mac.
Exactly.
People don't remember that Microsoft Office came out on a Mac first.
First.
Before there even was a Windows.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Neo is an amazing little machine. Yeah.
They compare it against this $1,200 Lenovo because you can find it on sale for $700 all the time.
Right.
Well, then it's massively overpriced.
And now a lot of companies are saying, we're bringing out the Neo killer.
Yep.
Remember when they were going to bring out the this killer, the that killer? Now Neo is the new hotness to be killed.
Yep.
We'll see. It's not impossible to do that.
Yep.
You just don't make a lot of money if you do.
Yeah.
So we'll see. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. What's up, Ed?
Good morning, guys. I have a MacBook Air running Monterey, and it looked like it was getting slow, and I was getting these odd pop-ups. So I downloaded Malwarebytes, and that works. I downloaded Komodo, and I'm having problems with that. It is saying that that something is the virus scanner is not functioning properly, and it has to restart the computer, and I have to restart the computer, and it does that several times, so I don't know what to do.
So,
we should probably pick a different program.
Yeah, there's no reason you have to stick with Komodo.
Okay.
So this might be a little controversial, but Malwarebytes is probably enough.
I think so, too.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
So it may not necessarily find a Windows virus on your Mac, but it can't do anything. A Windows virus can't do anything on your Mac.
Yeah.
But the malware that it finds is sufficient.
Right. Now, the other thing is...
On the Komodo website, the system requirements is it needs macOS 10.6.
Yeah, I was about to say.
That was 20 years ago. So yeah. They haven't kept it up to date. It's probably not Apple Silicon aware. It may not even be Intel aware. 10.6 was still PowerPC.
The other thing is, everybody's got expired software certificates.
Yes.
And I know that's a problem on the Windows side. If you haven't updated your software certificates, Komodo will not work properly.
Yeah, Apple just released OS updates for System 12, 13, 14, 15, all the old OSs to renew those expired certificates.
So it is possible that if you haven't updated your OS lately...
I did I think that's just a few weeks ago.
12.7.7, I think.
How many weeks ago?
A couple weeks, maybe.
Let's see. 12.7.7 came out in... No.
Yeah, I'm running 12.7.6.
Yeah, 12.7.6 came out in July of last year. So let me find out when that security update was. But it wouldn't hurt to do a check for updates again.
Yeah, it really wouldn't.
Okay.
But that's becoming the issue with running such an out-of-date OS, is the security certificates have all expired.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And when a program that requires them, like Komodo, sees that they are expired, it assumes there's been a breach and gives you all kinds of warnings.
And especially... pretty much every website you go to these days needs to have a valid security certificate.
Right. So make sure that you're at least up to date with whatever you can be up to date with on Monterey. I don't remember all the numbers, so I don't remember how old Monterey is. But
so that's 12. So we had 13, 14, 15, and 26.
Because they jumped 10. Why not?
Well, because they went to the year numbers.
And that's fair.
So now 26, you know how old it is.
Right.
Oh.
Okay.
Right. So you're four back anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, check for updates and see if there are new software certificates available, which may solve your whole problem. The other thing is that, as Steve said, Komodo antivirus is less of a problem. Mac has their own security. I don't know if Monterey has it, but
yeah, it's been there a long time. XProtect, that's hiding in there. Because X is cool.
Sure, to hide. Sure. So you could use that for antivirus. You should still run Malwarebytes, no question. But combining that with Mac security should be fine.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good luck.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's true of every operating system. My Linux system's all updated with new certificates. Windows updated with new certificates. Mac updated with new certificates. It is very hard to get anything done at all these days, particularly on the web, without the new certificates.
Yep. I ran into an issue with a customer. Their HP printer quit working. And I found out it was the security certificates in it. And I'm thinking, oh, why does your print job from your computer to your PC need to be encrypted? Nice that it was, but...
Right.
Not necessary.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's more going on in the background than you think there is, and keeping that all up to date is just as important as updating the programs you use. And that's what a lot of these updates do, and that's why... You know, people say, "Oh, I don't do my updates because they don't work." Well, sometimes your machine doesn't work without those updates. So, yep. When you start having those kind of problems, you pretty much have to update or else. And that's one of the reasons that when you have an older operating system like Monterey or old Chromebooks that no longer get updates, at some point they will be unable to get to the website you want them to get to. They will be unable to run the software that you want them to run, and that's simply because the certificates have expired. Certificates expire because you don't want them hanging out there for 50 years. That's a problem.
Waste.
That's a security issue.
The industry is moving towards 7-day certificates, which is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Right now they're a year and a half, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do understand. Moving away from passwords, I understand, from shortening the lengths of certificates, I get all of that. It is a pain in the patoot to have to do it, but the reality is that if you want to stay secure in this world, those are the things you have to do. Untwist your panties and do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, that's just
it's the cost
the
of doing business on the internet. I mean... You don't do that, then you don't have any reason to get all upset, like you said, get your panties in a knot, just because all of a sudden your information is leaked out and you're now getting all kinds of spam and everything else just because of your laziness.
There's enough of that happens without your help that you don't need to help them.
And you can find the system certificates on a Mac in Keychain Access. Also, any certificates that you have installed yourself, and you can see when they expire. A lot of them are December 31st, 2039, because that's one of the epoch.
Ends, the epoch. Yeah. You can't go past that anyway.
Yeah, but you can see which ones have expired. So I see right now I have a Cisco root certificate that expired May 14th. Maybe I can go to Cisco and download a new certificate.
And you hope so.
Yeah.
Otherwise, stuff's going to stop working.
Yeah.
And that's simply a fact. And when you can't get to a website, it's because you've got out-of-date certificates. I helped somebody this week, and that was exactly the last week, and that was exactly the problem.
And you get kind of sometimes an overly paranoid, insecure website error. Sometimes it's because the URL is wrong, and it is malicious software at you. Sometimes it's because your certificate expired. So you can view the certificate and see if the name on the certificate matches the place you think you're trying to go.
The one I really liked this week was somebody put out an ad, and in it was a link to Microsoft.com. Only if you look closely, it was rnmicrosoft.com.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just looked at it from a distance, it looked like an M instead of an R and an N.
Yep.
I had to admire it. You know, as horrible as it was, I had to admire it. They did. It was amazing.
A homograph attack.
Exactly right. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go too terribly far. Listen to the lovely things that are being said while we're taking this break, and then we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Fred from Rochester, New York, in the line. What's up, Fred?
Hey, just wanted to make everyone aware there's a, at least new to me, I've been getting phone calls. Of course, my phone is on Do Not Disturb, so it goes to voicemail, stating that verifying my $1,000 purchase of a new iPhone. If you did not make this purchase, call this number, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, there's been a surge in these fake spam phone calls and emails. Some of them legitimately come from PayPal, because PayPal has an invoicing service.
Right.
Yeah. So the bad guys create a fake invoice, and PayPal sends it to you.
Right.
So half of our check for spam instructions are make sure it's coming from who it says it is. It is.
It
coming
is.
From PayPal.
Right. But with something like this, and you're right, Fred, everybody can get these. So, folks, when you get something like this, check your bank.
Hang up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Delete.
Do you remember ordering? Yeah.
Did you order that? If you did not, delete it.
Yeah.
If you're really paranoid, go to your bank website and look to see if there's a purchase pending.
Yep.
If there's not, it's spam.
Yeah. In the past, I had gotten some via email, and they do have the PayPal the telltale sign. When you see the PayPal invoice,
yep,
it's a JPEG, not a PDF.
Right. Yep. Right.
PayPal doesn't. It's not. They're not taking a photo shot of it.
Right.
They'll send it directly.
Phone calls are kind of a new thing for them, so it's harder to check on a phone call.
Right.
And so they're waiting for you to say yes, so then they can charge you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Even when it's blocked. You know, because like I said, I have Do Not Disturb on, and the only ones that go through are my the ones that are starred on my, at least on my Android phone. That will still go to voicemail, and there are I've read a little bit about there are some ways of blocking calls from even going to voicemail, but you either have to go through a carrier or a third party app. I haven't had that many of them that I need, you know, that I felt the need to investigate that further. But just, you know, we're talking about scam, and we're talking about security today. And, everybody, there's another one.
Yep, absolutely right, Fred. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. Yeah, it's a... It's
constantly got to be on your toes.
And they're progressing and evolving to find new ways to scam you.
The way I put it is, when in doubt, pitch it out. Because, you know, if it's really that true, they'll send it to you again. Or you can actually, like Nick said, go into your account, see if there's a hit there. You should be checking your banking statement anyways. If you have the capability of checking it online, you should be daily checking your balances just to make sure that your card wasn't leaked out and hacked. Matter of fact, it was just 2 years ago this weekend that my wife's card got hacked. And, oh, gee, they waited until Friday night and went to have fun. And they wound up racking over, I think it was close to $600 of charges. And it wasn't until Tuesday, because it was Memorial Weekend.
Really? Just like now?
Yeah. Like I said, literally 2 weeks from today, 2 years ago today. They started on a Friday. It was on a Friday night, and then I went in Saturday morning to check, and all of a sudden I see all these charges. So we had to shut her card down, which was great with the banking app. We just went in there, locked it up. They couldn't use it. But they had already gone to a nail salon and the theater. They went out and bought dinner, and that was over $200 there, the dinner. They must have had a crowd.
Sure.
And
hey everybody, I got a credit card. Let's go eat.
Yeah, it was close to $600, but we wound up getting it all back, but it took a couple of months
because
they had to go and verify it and everything else.
We had a customer this week get hit by a fake Spectrum email. There's a lot of those going around now too. If you don't verify your email address today, we're going to cancel your account. Well, I've been using this address for 30 years. I don't need to verify it.
Right.
So, you know, we tell them it's spam because it doesn't come from Spectrum. It's gobbledygook.something.something, you know. But that's another
fight.
All the gobbledygook. That's a good test that it's spam. But just for grins and giggles, I click on the URL in a sandbox browser and go look at it. It was a really good imitation of the Spectrum login screen.
They can, with AI now, make it look, you would swear on your child's life.
Especially since Spectrum's webmail login screen is very bare minimum.
Yeah, it really is.
A Spectrum logo, username, password. None of the links worked, except the continue after you put your username and password in. So, you better go change your password just to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Did you click the link? Yeah, might have.
Because I've
gotten three or four. So one of the things, if it sounds too urgent, it's probably fake.
Yeah.
You know, do this today or are you going to lose everything? If Spectrum really was doing something like that, they would have sent you a few. They said, I've gotten a few of these over the last few weeks. Yeah, okay.
Oh, one
thing. The spam guys send you multiple copies of the spam.
One thing that I got just last week was I'm treasurer for our call signs for the ham radio. And all of a sudden, I get this email, and it looks like it's from the president of the club, saying, hey, I'm awful busy. I'm out of town right now. I need you to go and purchase these five gift cards for $100 a piece, and I'll reimburse you.
Yeah, especially for public organizations where, like the board is
listed somewhere.
Listed somewhere.
Oh, yeah, it's right there on our website. Yep. And So what did I do? I, erased that, turned around, called the president up, and I said, hey, give me a call when you get a chance. Of course, it went to voicemail.
Of course.
And he called me back, and he goes, no, I didn't do it. As well, just let the other members know that this fake email is going around wanting to have you, you're sending it out, and you got to send them to this address.
Yeah, I'm in a conference, and I want to send gift cards to some of our vendors.
Yeah, right. Just to, help, blah, blah, blah. No.
No. I regularly get, your account has been locked by the administrator of AskNick.com.
Mm-hmm.
Call this number.
Oh, really?
Did you ask yourself if you locked your account?
Yeah. I slap myself a couple of times and unlock it. They're out there and they make it sound important and they make it sound urgent and they seem like as Steve said, they want you to say yes.
Yeah.
They want to hear the word yes. So I am training myself. I'm not entirely there yet. When I pick up the phone and I hear someone say, "Is this Nick Francesco?" I answer, "I am he."
Oh, see, they'll ask, they'll sit there, "Are you Dave Enright?" I say, "How can I help you?"
Yeah, and anything but yes.
Yeah. Oh, no, for a number of years now, since we've been talking about this, I've just gotten into the habit. Anytime, And it could be a legit place, doctor's office. Mm-hmm. They'll go, is this Dave Enright? I go, how can I help you?
Yeah. So what they want to get your voice recorded saying yes. So when you dispute the charge with your credit card company,
yeah,
the credit card company goes to the other end and says, this charge is being disputed. Can you prove that they really bought this? And they play the recording that of you saying yes, that you agreed to spend $1,800 buying this thing.
Yep.
And then they come back to you and say, no, legitimate charge.
Yeah, they...
We had a guy, they had a contract and signed his name with brush script. And the credit card company says, no, we've have, you know, they have a signed contract that you signed it, so we're not going to give you your money back. So then you escalate again. So it just, it takes forever to get your money back on things like this.
Mm-hmm. Some phone companies will let you record a call.
Well, New York is a one-party state. As long as one person in the call knows it's recording, you don't have to tell anyone.
Right.
So you know you're recording it.
right. And that's perfectly legal in New York State.
Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, recording your own phone calls is often a very good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can bring your recording to court and say, this is what actually happened.
Mm-hmm. And it's starting to be built into most cell phones. A lot of times it's third-party software.
Right.
But now a lot of the carrier or the cell companies and the OS are starting to have that record button right in the phone interface.
And took it out, and I don't know if it's come back yet or not.
Probably they don't want to run into the legal issues of telling them, or they just say this call is being recorded.
Like I say, if it's not in my list of contacts, it goes to either screening, which I love on the Pixel phone. It sits there, call comes in, and it's new. I just go, yeah, no, you're not on my list, screen. And 99% of the time, click, they hang up.
This is Google Voice messaging.
Yep.
By the time they get to that, they've hung up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. I love that, too. I love that on my Pixel phone. All right, let me read the Microsoft news. On Wednesday, Microsoft started rolling out security patches.
That's a week, almost a daily
thing. Yeah, no kidding. For two Defender vulnerabilities that were exploited in zero-day attacks.
So the program that's supposed to defend you from attacks is being attacked.
One is a privilege escalation security flaw affecting Microsoft Malware Protection Engine, which provides the scanning, detection, and cleaning capabilities for Microsoft antivirus and anti-spyware software. You know, the whole point of the thing. The other vulnerability affects systems running the Microsoft Defender anti-malware platform, a collection of security tools. So update now. Again, this goes to you people who say, I don't want to update right away. I never update. Well, okay. That's your choice. Microsoft has shared mitigations for YellowKey, a recently disclosed Windows BitLocker zero-day vulnerability that grants access to protected drives. To mitigate YellowKey attacks, Microsoft recommends removing the auto FSTX.exe entry from the session manager's boot execute reg underscore multi underscore sc value, then reestablishing BitLocker trust for WinRE by following the procedure detailed under mitigations. Microsoft advises customers to configure BitLocker on already encrypted devices from TPM only mode to TPM plus PIN mode via PowerShell, the command line, or the control panel, which will require a pre-boot PIN to decrypt the drive at startup, and should, emphasis on should, block YellowKey attacks, which may be easy for the average user.
I don't have any YellowKeys.
What really ought to be easy for the average user is to just remove BitLocker.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't need it anyway. BitLocker encrypts the drive in case it's stolen.
Similar to File Vault on the Mac.
Once you log in, BitLocker has decrypted your drive. So if you get a virus, that drive is open to it. BitLocker does nothing.
Nope.
Neither does File Vault.
No one can get to your data without the password, not even you.
Right. So if you lose your password, or and you know how you are with passwords. If you forget your password,
you're doomed.
It makes it harder to back up. BitLocker is... Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft has confirmed that SMS or text message-based authentication and account recovery for personal accounts is on its way out. The company argued, correctly, that plain text SMS codes are no longer fit for secure authentication, particularly now that stronger alternatives are widely available. In its place, Microsoft is steering users towards passwordless accounts, pass keys, and verified secondary email addresses. Pass keys are the clear priority, an allegedly phishing-resistant authentication method that becomes significantly harder to crack when paired with hardware biometrics or a device PIN. I just tried to log on to Facebook and had to go to my authenticator and type in a 6-digit code. Great. I love that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because Facebook is so important.
Well, but the reality
but
is,
still, the security.
You don't want your secure. Bad guys getting into it because of all the personal knowledge you put in there.
That's exactly right. Microsoft has confirmed user reports that the Teams team collaboration app is displaying non-dismissible location prompts on some Mac OS systems. According to affected Teams users, these non-dismissible prompts have been appearing on Mac devices running Mac OS versions 14 Sonoma, 15 Sequoia, and 26 Tahoe over the past week, asking for permission to use their location for things like GPS and Wi-Fi. But, according to Microsoft, it's not their fault. The culprit is a recent Mac OS security update that prevents the operating system from retaining users' location permission selections. Microsoft plans to raise the quality bar of Windows 11 drivers. I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. Microsoft plans to raise the quality bar of Windows 11 drivers as drivers sit at the heart of every Windows experience. Back in the day, it frequently hosted Windows hardware engineering conferences where Microsoft developers and OEM partners went to work on quality. The last one was held in 2018 when Microsoft started to care less about Windows and more about its cloud business. Users have observed a decrease in driver quality. And now Microsoft says they're rededicating themselves to better driver quality. We'll see.
Now, was that supposed to be news or a comical bit?
This is Saturday Night Live. This is.
I believe it. Yeah.
I'm Michael Che right now. You may have noticed the floating Copilot button has appeared in Word, Excel, and PowerPoint in recent weeks and floats above the bottom right-hand section of spreadsheets or documents. It has angered many Excel users in particular because it obstructs cells and you can't fully disable it. This is what we were talking about earlier.
Yep.
Microsoft is rolling out Office app updates next week that allow users to move the button to the ribbon so it no longer floats on top of documents. But don't disable us. Give us a call instead at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415.
And I'm sorry, that's where I do not like Defender. I'd rather use a pay for a program like Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebytes. They are updated. It almost seems like Super Anti-Spyware every other day.
Yeah.
It's doing updates. Microsoft, it's one, maybe this week. If we don't get to it, maybe next. Remember, they've cut a lot of staff.
Yeah, a lot of staff.
And, you know, it's just, well, hey, Joe, it's your turn this week to do it. Whereas Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebytes, if you're paying for those programs, like I say, they are constantly updating.
That's their priority. That's their business.
Yeah, that's the only thing they know. Not like Microsoft, which is trying to do an operating system and these apps and all everything else.
Take a look.
The third-party one has to be better than the free one you get.
Yep. Yeah.
Take a look at Microsoft's financials. Microsoft is now a company that sells cloud services to businesses. That's where they make their money. That is where they make the vast majority of their money.
Mm-hmm.
Operating systems are a distant third also ran.
If that.
So your operating system is not the priority. God knows you're not the priority. So, take that as it stands. Follow the money.
Well,
cherchez la bucks, people.
Like we've said before, Microsoft's direction is they've gotten rid of so many people that now we are the beta testers for testing out stuff that they're trying to do. And if it doesn't work and it messes up your machine, thanks for the effort and do another update.
Right. The very first department they cut was QA, quality assurance.
Yeah.
And now they're saying, we have things that just the quality isn't good of our drivers. Who?
Really?
Because you have no QA department anymore.
And all of the entry-level programmers are being replaced by AI.
Right.
So there are no people learning to move into the mid-level and high-level programming in the next few years.
Right. When all those when all the people at the high end retire, who replaces them? Nobody.
Yeah.
I saw a meme the other day that said, don't worry, tech people. AI can't fix a problem if you can't explain the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The average user can't. We're safe.
Yeah.
Well, and they're right. If you mm-hmm. have it's got it, the AI is the textbook definition of GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. If you give it garbage prompts, you get garbage back out. If you can't explain we have people who call us who can't explain their problems, and we have 40, 50, yep. 100 total years of
knowledge
to say, do you really mean X or Y?
Yeah.
And we can narrow it down and figure out the answer. AI is just going to say, oh, there's a problem on your machine.
Yep.
Do this, because it won't say I don't know, and
right.
it won't ask for more information. It'll make up an answer.
Well, it's just going on what it knows, which sometimes can be very limited and, also very incorrect.
Yep.
And you may have given it bad input because you don't know the terms it needs.
Yeah. What it's really looking for to solve your problem.
Yep.
Or people that call things by their own name. My family knows some of them, Paschetti.
Right.
Yeah, okay. But, Skizzers.
Right.
There's some that are kind of universally known, but I want some peanuts. They're right here, ma'am. No, not those peanuts. Those.
The slang terms.
Those are cashews, ma'am. Oh, I call them peanuts.
And
right. And you never have any.
Or,
if you're asking for peanuts, we're going to show you peanuts.
or the thing in the screen here.
Yeah.
There's a thing on my screen I don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay. What's that thing?
Yeah.
I need a description.
Everything is on the screen.
Right. And I get that. I get that people don't have the technical knowledge. And
mm-hmm.
and that's fair. I'm not saying that you should have that technical knowledge or that you're stupid because you don't. Because I'm not saying that at all.
Mm-mm.
What I am saying is, we can figure out what it is you're asking. AI cannot. And so I don't see AI as... when people defend AI, universally, those people are experts in their field.
Mm-hmm.
They understand the field. They understand how to craft a prompt for AI. And therefore, they will always get a good answer. And they are smart enough to check that answer to see if it's good and iterate a new answer if it isn't. That's what AI is for. When the average person, which people saying, we want to vibe code. You can now vibe code an Android app just by telling the AI, I want an app that does this.
Yep.
Try it.
Mm-hmm.
Please try it. And see what you get. If you are a programmer, you will get a decent program that you can iterate through several prompts to get what you really want. If you're not a programmer, a starting place. If you're not a programmer, I guarantee you will become quickly frustrated with what it cannot do.
Yep.
And like I said, I have used AI to fix programs. I write the original program and I say, I would like it to do this. I want it to multi-thread. Well, I could go through all the things that I need to do to make it multi-threading. Or I can say, here's an existing program, multi-thread it. Boom, it works. And I can say, multi-thread it in this function, which is where I wanted it. And it will. And it does that easily. And then I spend the next 2 hours testing it to make sure it really does what I expected it to do. If you're not willing to put in that time and you don't have the knowledge to do that ahead of time, then AI is not going to work for you the way you think it is. And we're going to see a lot of really frustrated people the more and more AI. And some things are real easy. You know, the whole, all the stuff that Google showed at AI is real easy.
Mm-hmm.
Mary wants to go to lunch. I highlight Mary and say, set a lunch date for the two of us at Fred's. Restaurant. Easy. That's nonsensically easy. A lot of the other stuff is not. All right, listen. We're going to take a break. Don't go too far. There's some lovely pieces of messaging coming along that you should be listening to. But we're going to take a quick break, take a bio break. Come on back. There's a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. More Dave Enright, more Steve Ray, more Nick Francesco, and more you. But you got to give us a call. So why don't you do that while we take this break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the truly great and truly, truly grateful to you for your support, Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0415. I'm afraid I don't have your sonorous tone.
Yeah. I yelled. Did you hear me? Is this room soundproof
enough? No, it didn't come through.
He's talking over you. It's a soundproof door.
Yeah.
All right, Google on Wednesday published exploit code for an unfixed vulnerability in its Chromium browser code base that threatens millions of people using Chrome, Microsoft Edge, and virtually all other Chromium-based browsers. The unfixed vulnerability, which has been around for at least 3.5 years, can be exploited by any website a user visits. In effect, the compromise amounts to a limited backdoor that makes a device part of a limited botnet. Not sure why they'd reveal an unpatched exploit like that, but here we are. As part of that massive slate of new AI announcements at Google I.O., Google also announced new compute-based usage limits for Gemini. Existing users don't seem too happy about it. Google has updated usage limits to take into account the length of chats, features used, and the overall complexity of a prompt. In other words, the more power that goes into your prompt, the more it counts toward your usage limits. There's an overall weekly limit as well as usage limits that reset every 5 hours. Needless to say, users aren't ecstatic, even though there's still a powerful, arguably generous free tier. You can see your usage at gemini.google.com/usage. If you're signed in to your Google account. Google seems to have partially acknowledged the tight restrictions and has raised rate limits in anti-gravity by 3 times. Twice. Following a strange issue causing first-generation Chromecast devices to fail, Google has ended software updates for nearly every other Chromecast model. No device gets software updates forever, but TV streaming devices tend to have a longer lifespan than most because, for many, it's a device that isn't replaced all that often. The only Chromecast device still receiving security updates is 2022's Chromecast with Google TV HD, which I think is the one I've got. I have to look tonight. That's likely because the device is still within its 5-year window, which Google set as a minimum of software support.
And related to that, Amazon just announced a bunch of new Kindles they're abandoning. They already abandoned a bunch of them. Now they're abandoning a bunch more.
A bunch more. And right now, we don't know if they will be rootable. And therefore, you could put a different operating system on them.
To still get your books.
Right, to still get any books. Right. I mean, you'll always be able to use the app on your phone or your whatever, but if you have a Kindle, the Kindle itself will not be... You can still read any books you've already downloaded, but you can't get new books. With the massive announcement of the Google Book and its upcoming Android-based operating system completely dominating the headlines since last week, it's easy to forget that Google still has a massive fleet of Chromebooks to maintain. Chromebooks, not Google Books. To that end, Chrome OS 1.4.8 is officially rolling out on the stable channel. While there aren't any new features, it carries some critical back-end changes that make it worth jumping into your settings menu to trigger the update if it hasn't hit your device yet. Back in March, we told you that an update sent to the Pixel Watch left the timepiece unable to track user sleep-related data. While Google has yet to patch this issue from March, a new problem has cropped up. Sleep data are failing to appear on the display, even though the data do appear inside the Fitbit app of the user's phones. While this is hardly an earth-shaking issue, it's annoying that a company as big as Google is taking this long to fix it. For those of you who missed it, the Google Book is a new category of premium laptops designed to be, I hope you're sitting down, AI first. It'll run a new OS called Aluminium, and yes, they both spelled and pronounce it with the extra I. Interesting story about that. I'll tell you about it later. Will be built around Gemini intelligence and connect seamlessly with your Android phone and even let you run your Android phone's apps on its screen, giving Google an ecosystem more like Apple's. Information is practically non-existent on this device yet. We'll let you know more when we know more. You can see the brochureware at googlebook.com. But you can give us a call about dang near anything else at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. I have some friends who are from the British Isles, and they're constantly correcting me when I say aluminum. No, it's aluminium. I delight in pointing out to them the fact that the chemist who invented aluminum was British, called it aluminum, and if you look at the original documents he put out, he spells it aluminum. Somewhere along the line, the British, like they have this mania for adding a U to every friggin' word on the planet, added an I to aluminum and came up with aluminium.
There's a bunch of other elements that are similar.
Yeah.
Silicium? I can't even pronounce it with the extra I in it.
Yeah.
Zirconium? Glucium?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a page on Merriam-Webster about, you know, historical differences.
Yeah. So, yeah. The original British spelling and pronunciation of aluminum was aluminum.
And it comes, well, going back farther into the Latin, the I-U-M at the end, meaning a related to.
Oh, speaking of which,
mm-hmm.
This whole idea of things like not ending a sentence with a preposition.
Thereof.
You know, well, English is a street language, okay? It's rough and tumble. It picks up words and stuff from everybody. It
mugs other languages in the corner.
It mugs every language in the corner and steals what it wants. That is it, and steals his sneakers and runs home in them. Absolutely true. What happened was in the late 1600s, a bunch of British blue noses decided that the language they spoke needed to be more like Greek. So they added a whole bunch of rules that English never had, mm-hmm. like not ending a sentence with a preposition.
Yeah.
Those were never part of the language. They were added by those people. And therefore, if I want to end a sentence with a preposition, I can.
Yep. Mm-hmm. There's a YouTube channel called Rob Words, a Brit living in Germany, talking about language and how words have come along. There was a neat one. We talk about silent letters in English sometimes. Every single letter in English can be silent in some word.
That's true.
Which is ridiculous.
Well, ghost. Why is there an H in ghost?
Mm-hmm.
Because the first person who brought a printing press to America, and I don't remember the names, and I'm sorry about this, hired a bunch of Flemish typesetters to do the typesetting for it, and they spelled ghost, G-H-O-S-T.
Ghost.
Ghost. And they pronounced it like that.
Yep.
It's Flemish.
Yeah.
So when they saw the word ghost with no H, they thought it was wrong. Yep. And there's a whole bunch of other words like that as well.
I've read one about the U's. All the U's in British English that were taken out of English, American English, was because of the telegraph, where you had to pay by the letter. So they just took out letters that weren't needed.
Yep.
So, you know, the English is, American English is spelled that way because capitalism.
Why everything is the way it is in America. Capitalism.
Charging too much for everything.
Yep. Yeah.
Capitalism. Make as much money as you can at the expense of everybody else.
Everybody else. That's all right. Well, except your shareholders. Fiscal responsibility. That's their job. And I get it. I do get it. I don't have to like it, but I get it. All right. Waiting for Dave to sit down. Waiting for Dave to remember where he is. He's got it. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's up?
Howdy, gents.
How you doing?
Yeah, let's add England to the list of countries we need to invade and not support and destroy.
There you go.
That's right. We need them. We've got to have something that we want. Boiled meat. That's what we need more of.
That's what we need more of. Boiled meat.
Yes.
And blood pudding.
Scrumptious. So, anyway, I have a tale of woe to tell you guys. I recently upgraded my phone to a Pixel 10 Pro. Applause, please. But I got it through Verizon. And, you know, as you guys know, or may or may not, Verizon's recently acquired Frontier.
Yeah.
And out in the rural areas where I am, Pavilion, they've been aggressively marketing fiber.
Right.
So I sit down with a guy, and he's like, well, wait, not so fast. Of course, he's doing a sales pitch.
Sure.
He tells me that, oh, yeah, if you get the Pixel Pro 10, you get YouTube Premium for life. And like Dave says, I was born at night, but not last night.
Yeah.
And so I give him the Spock eyebrow, and I say, I'm going to get Premium for life, huh? I don't think so. Oh, yeah, for sure. They're going to bill me for life for it.
Whose life?
But it ain't going to be free.
Right.
So then they also say, well, you also get free installation fiber optic at your house. I already have Spectrum. I'm happy with it, and I don't want to mess with it. And he's like, yeah, for sure. I said, well, pre-installation, if I just call them and tell them I want fiber optic, I can just tell them to waive the installation. I guarantee you they will.
Yeah, they will.
Oh, no, this is going to be a special deal. Whatever. So I'm just telling you guys. And so I get this thing in here. They actually sent, multiple harassing emails and texts. Then they actually sent a goon out here to install it. Had I not been home, I guarantee you he would have been up on that pole ripping stuff apart.
Yep.
I never said yes to it. I never said I want this. So I want all the soundbiters out there to understand, if you do upgrade and you get that pitch, just belt and suspenders, because they're really shining them. And I've got no truck with Verizon. I've had them all my life. But man, I'm telling you, this aggressive marketing, I would.
They have to do
something to pay for this Verizon deal.
Yeah, well, exactly.
The Frontier deal. Yeah.
It's everywhere. Everybody's aggressively upselling everything. It's very hard to buy anything now without upsells.
No doubt. Well, I called Verizon customer service. I called billing, and I'm a man of peace, but I kind of unloaded a little bit on them. not because I'm mad at the agent. I'm mad at Verizon.
Yeah.
And she actually handled me very well. But they did. They said, I know this and that. They knew exactly what I was talking about. So they rebated me all this nonsense and, all this stuff. And I told them to stop sending people to my house to, put stuff on it I don't want. So they're very familiar with what's going on. But for every one guy that barks at him, nine people get screwed.
That's the truth. Well, you're not screwed as such. I mean, you do get service. You do get the, Verizon
the product.
Fiber. You do get that. So it's not, they're not, you do get something for what you're saying. So
well, I got, but the thing, the twist is, I already have YouTube Premium, so they were billing me for something that I was already paying for.
They will do that. They will absolutely do that. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So
that's why we tell people all the time: check your bills every month for everything.
And it, well, sometimes it's hard because they bundle everything
right
in one price, and that you don't see the breakdown of what all the services you're paying for.
It's hidden in there.
Yeah, and that's always annoying that this carrier gives you this service bundled, this carrier gives you that service bundled,
right?
As a way, so you can never compare directly carrier to carrier because it's never the same thing. It's like if you go to two different computer stores, they never have the exact same model computer, so you can't compare.
Right.
Oh, for sure. I just suggest that if you walk into any one of these stores, dress like a baseball umpire.
Yeah.
And just say, okay, what do you got for me?
Either a baseball umpire or a 16th century knight.
Oh, both.
Or both.
Check it out, somebody. All right, you guys. We'll take care and enjoy yourself. Thanks for being there for us.
Thank you, Brian. Bye-bye.
See you down the road.
Okay, now somebody out there, I hope, is going to create an AI image of a knight in shining armor wearing umpire padding and send it to us. That would be nice.
Yeah, the big vest on the front and the mask.
Over the armor.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. Yep.
And he's standing there with his jousting stick.
There you go. Now we're talking. His lance.
Yeah.
Look, I get it. You know, in these parlous economic times, nobody's making as much money as they want to be making. We saw that in the last pledge drive. So I see that.
Found it.
And so that
cartoonstop.com. Knights playing baseball.
There you go. Now we're talking.
Including the umpire.
there's.
Thou art out. Sorry.
That's fine. My daughter once, when she was in a summer theater camp, they did an exercise where every group had to do the who's on first sketch.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And they were given a different time period. And my daughter's was Shakespeare. Uh-huh. They rewrote the whole thing as a Shakespearean.
Oh.
It was hysterical. It was just absolutely, I couldn't catch my breath. I could not catch my breath.
See, and most of the younger folks out there
don't have any idea.
Don't know what the hell we're talking about. Abbott and Costello? Yeah.
I like the one with music bands. Who's on first?
Yep.
What? Guess Who's on second?
Oh, nice! I like it.
Yes is on third.
but there's a if you go and watch the original, I know it's on YouTube. Who's on first with Abbott and Costello? It was one of their vaudeville sketches that they put in a couple of different movies, and they are wonderful.
Apparently, the Dodgers have a player named Ching Lung Hu, and people have taken pictures of him on first.
On first base.
Going around. Okay. I've been waiting years for this.
Friends of mine. We had a theater in St. Louis and they got to do Who's on First in the stadium.
Oh.
Okay. And they've been doing this on stage in a show called The Burlicue Boys for months. They get out there and they get on their microphones and the two of them start and they go, you know, hey Lou, hey Bud. 2 seconds later, over the speakers, hey Lou,
yeah,
hey Bud. The two of them just looked at each other. How do you maintain your timing
with the delay,
with it coming back to you 2 seconds later? They said, we just shut our brains down and talked.
Well, that's like with us here. We have...
we shut our brains down 2 hours ago.
shut our brains down and just talk.
No.
That's us. Thanks for calling.
No, I put the board into a different mode. Because otherwise, if I did, we would hear ourselves talking in our headsets.
Right.
So there is a way, and singers are the same way. You'll see a lot of singers wearing earpieces. It's because that way they can control through that they're only hearing the music that they're saying right then, not replaying back into the ears. And it's the same here at the radio station.
Right.
I switch it over into this other mode until we leave so that we don't hear ourselves talking to ourselves.
Yeah. Right. And back, you know, an eighth of a second or 8 seconds later, whatever the
yeah.
number is. Yes, and I understand that. So, yeah. So, listen, don't forget, if you want to hear people who shut their brains down at noon talking to you, give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ.
We do it yearly.
It's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415. I want to go back to the Chrome, to the Google Book. I'm never going to get that straight, ever. I'm going to get that straight.
It's not a Google Chromebook. It's a Google Book Chrome.
No, just a Google Book.
Yeah, no.
Don't do that.
Really messes my mind.
I already have a tenuous enough grasp of reality. Don't help me.
Dyslexic.
Google Book. We don't know anything about it at this point. We don't know what it's going to cost. We don't know what processors are in it. We have some idea. We've seen some things that are likely possible. They're from the partners that they've got building the thing. We assume there will be, you know, whatever chip we think might be in it or whatever.
Especially since they've said it's going to be a premium laptop.
It's not going to be a $69 Chromebook. It's going to be a $400 Google Book.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a real device. We'll see.
That's what they're touting, whether it comes to fruition.
Well, the new target price is $500,
mm-hmm.
right? It's the Neo price. You want to put out a premium enough, you know, and even Apple will tell you this. They have premium laptops for $1,000 or $2,000, but they have the Neo Book for $500, which is premium enough for the average user.
And there's a whole lot of average users. Yeah.
And so what the other companies are now saying is, okay, $500 for a device that is premium enough is what we're going to target. And so Google is doing it. They're partnering with a half a dozen companies, HP, Dell, Asus, everybody. This laptop, when it came out, was the equivalent of $500 today. Like I said, this is 14 years old, so it was a lot less. But it's at the equivalent of about $500 today. So, you know, I could see them hitting that price point without a lot of trouble. Now, will it be as good as the Neo? Will it do as well as the Neo? Nobody knows any of that.
Yeah.
But can it be done technically? Absolutely.
Oh, no doubt. But it's like we've said right now, and the bigger thing is going to be at what price point. Only because right now chips are at a premium.
That's the problem. That's the real problem.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that the Neo is only 8 gig of RAM.
Yeah.
They can't afford to 16 gig of RAM for $500.
Well, and the chip it's using only maxes at 8, the A18.
The A18.
So we're expecting next year they're going to have the A19,
right?
Which will go to 12 gigs of RAM.
Well, but assuming and that's more, they can afford 12 gigs of RAM, because prices aren't going to go down in the next year.
Yeah. Oh, heck no.
So one of the theories is that the A18 chip was used in the iPhone 16.
Right.
So that last year's phone chip is this year's entry-level computer chip. But it has one less graphic core than the phone did. So there's a process in the industry called binning. So when you make a chip, if a piece of it doesn't work, you throw it in the bin.
Right.
Well, so one of these graphic cores didn't work. Oh, we've got all these chips with only 4 graphic cores, not 5. Let's find a use for them. So they technically are making the Neo out of free chips.
Yeah, essentially. But what happens when those run out?
Right, which they apparently already are starting to.
Yep.
Because it's much... So reports are saying the Neo is much more popular than Apple expected.
Yeah.
How could you not expect how popular a $599 Mac would be?
Okay.
Especially Apple is not known for skimping on its margins.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Pricing.
So here's the thing. Apple, I think, ended up being a victim of their own hubris.
Mm-hmm.
We sell $2,000 laptops. That's what we sell.
Yep.
Yep.
A $500 laptop is crap, so not a lot of people are going to buy
it.
When everybody else says, wait a minute, hold on, a Mac for $500? Yes, please, all day long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How many can I get?
They always like maxing out the high-end machine to see what you're going to get. $7,000.
Yeah.
For a 16-inch MacBook Pro. But that's it's got 40 graphics cores.
Yeah.
128 gigs of RAM.
Yes.
And 8 terabyte of storage.
Yep. And who uses that?
Hollywood.
The average user does not.
That's a Hollywood video editing machine.
That's exactly right. What the average user wants is, hey, what? A Neo.
Yep. I do my email. I look at web pages. I do little photos.
That's why Chromebooks sell so well. If I can buy a $100 laptop that does the three things I want, why would I spend more? But now if I can get a Mac for essentially a third or a quarter of the price I think they are, I'm a happy camper.
A lot of the contrarians in the beginning when it was announced were saying, I can't run Logic on it. I can't run Final Cut on it. So a lot of the early reviewers did.
And it worked.
The Neo does run Final Cut.
Not well.
10 or 12
fast.
Tracks. It can run Final Cut. Five or six tracks. It can.
But most people don't run Final Cut.
Yeah.
It's like when we talk to Bill, and Bill, I love you, but when you talk about what, you know, it doesn't run Adobe or it doesn't run this or it doesn't run that, most people don't care.
Yeah.
And that's just the way that works.
Most people don't buy anything extra that didn't come with their computer.
That's exactly
because it has a web browser and it has an email client.
And that's all they need.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Pat from Webster, New York, on the line. What's up, Pat?
Hi. I'm wondering what the fundamental difference between cloud storage and cloud backup is.
So, at heart, none.
Yeah, really. Essentially the same thing.
Sort of. So here's the thing. Backup means that properly. Backup means that when you create or change a file on your computer, it immediately gets copied somewhere else. Right? And so that one of the places you can copy it is to the cloud.
Someone else's computer,
essentially. Yeah. To the cloud.
Yeah.
So in that particular instance, there is no difference between cloud backup and cloud storage. However, you can also use cloud storage as your attic. So I create a website, and then that website goes away. But I don't want to lose the files because I spend so much time on them. So I zip them all up into an archive, and now I got to put them somewhere.
Yeah.
I can put them somewhere on my computer, which takes up space on my computer, or I can store them in the attic on the cloud.
Right.
And so that's really the major difference. Most people, when they use cloud storage and cloud backup, they are interchangeable terms. But they don't have to be.
And then one of the next confusions comes in with cloud sync, which is more common than cloud backup.
Mm-hmm.
Backup generally keeps your old files, so you can go back and find something you deleted yesterday or last week.
Right.
A syncing program makes everything the same at both ends. So if you delete a file on your computer, it's deleted from the cloud.
Right.
Right.
But so, but the difference is more semantic than practical.
Uh-huh. Well, if your cloud storage is similar to, like, Google Drive, how does it differ from Google Drive?
Well,
Google Drive is cloud storage.
Yeah. It is cloud storage. So, okay, let's take the example of Google Drive or OneDrive or iCloud. If you write a program, if you write a document in Google Docs or Word or Pages, still call it Pages, and store it solely on the cloud, then it is cloud stored.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you've created cloud storage.
Right,
it's not backed up anywhere.
Yeah,
except in the background, maybe. I know Google, for example, has multiple backups of every one of their drives all over the world. But generally speaking, it's not backed up.
Right,
most of the major companies have cloud storage. Google Drive, Microsoft's OneDrive, Apple's iCloud Drive. There's also Dropbox. That was one of the first big ones.
Right.
Box.net. There's a bunch of different companies that pCloud that offer cloud storage, so they can compete in price with each other.
Right. So here's I think the easy way to decide this. If you put something in the cloud and it's your only copy, it's cloud storage. If you put something in the cloud and it's one of more than one copy, it's cloud backup.
Yeah. Well, I thought you didn't want to use Google Drive as your only cloud storage or cloud backup, because there are instances where that can be deleted.
Yes, correct. You never want to have one copy of your stuff anywhere.
You want to have multiple copies, so if one goes wrong, you have another.
And let me correct myself. Let's go back to that example of you have created a website, I take it down, I zip it up, and I want to archive it. I will put it on the cloud, and it's cloud storage, but of course I will also put it on my 3-terabyte backup drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have more than one copy of it, although I am using the cloud for storage. It is also a backup.
We have seen a lot of people will back up their files and then delete the copy on their computer, usually to make room for something new.
Right.
Well, now it's not backed up. There's only one copy because you deleted the second copy.
Right.
Yeah.
So so just the 3-2-1 backup rule. You want to have 3 copies of your data on 2 different media, and at least one should be off-site. So some people will back up to a hard drive and then take that hard drive to another building.
Which is
fine.
Fine.
So fire, flood, theft, the computer and the backup hard drive sitting next to it are both either burned up or flooded.
Right.
Yeah.
But with cloud storage, that's someone else's computer. We used to love, what was the one that let you, for free, you could store on your friend's hard drive?
Oh, yeah.
So one of the big cloud backup companies, they used to let you do that. Now you have to pay them for the storage.
Right.
So you could store stuff on your friend's drive. They could store stuff on your drive. So you had an off-site backup with someone you trusted. Because that's the other problem with cloud storage. You have to trust them at the other end. and theoretically, they can get to your data, because if you can look at your data on the web, so can they, because it's on their computer. A lot of people have a local backup drive because that's fast, and they'll have cloud storage to be off-site. The problem with cloud storage is restore. We had three people in the last couple of weeks where they lost their whole hard drive and they had to restore from one of the large cloud backup services. One of them took 18 days, the other one took 22 days, and the third one hasn't finished yet, and it's pushing 4 weeks now.
Right.
And we have gigabit internet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The other end has got to be limiting it.
Right.
Uh-huh.
To come down. To the one that just finished a couple of days ago, it was only doing 1 gig a day. And it was 250 gigs of data. And that one took 25 days.
They're throttling you.
Yeah.
Now, you can do that. I know in Linux, you can use a mesh VPN like Tailscale and a program like Borg Backup.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have put a computer in your house.
Yeah. SyncThing does that, too.
SyncThing does that as well.
Some people, Steve Gibson's big on that. He's got his home office and he's got his office.
Right.
And so he has two Synology NASs at each end running SyncThing. So everything he does at one end is synchronized to his other office. So it doesn't matter where he is. He talks about going to Starbucks in the morning for his triple venti quad whatever $15 coffee drink.
Yeah, multi-layer.
And programming for 4 hours on his laptop that's also running SyncThing, so it synchronizes with all his other places.
Mm-hmm.
So, Pat, don't get hung up on the terminology. Think instead in terms of the effect.
Mm-hmm.
How many copies of your software, of your item do you have, and where are they?
Mm-hmm.
That goes right to the 3-2-1. Three copies in two separate places, one of which is offline.
Yeah.
In the cloud, preferably.
Yeah. Yeah, presently I back up the two different hard drives, external hard drives.
Good.
And I'm looking at some cloud, and this came up, and then I got all confused over it.
Right. Don't think of the terminology, because words are slippery.
Yeah.
Think of the concept.
Mm-hmm.
Got it?
Well, no, but with something like pCloud, do you have to tell it which folders to sync?
Yes.
And then those are automatically copied then to the cloud?
Those are automatically copied to the cloud, so it is a sync, which means if you delete it from your drive, you delete it from the cloud as well. It will. Mm-hmm. It does have, I'm paying for pCloud, and so I have I believe it's 30-day...
I think we looked that up. It's 15-day for the free plan and 30 days for the paid plan. But you may not realize you need that file back for 6 months.
Right.
Yeah.
So it is the most convenient, easiest, fastest to both save and retrieve from, but it shouldn't be your only copy.
Yeah, right. Okay. Because I'll always have the external hard drives.
Exactly.
Too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've talked about it in the past. The odds of your computer dying are, pretty high, 100%. Your computer's going to die someday.
Yes.
Yeah.
The odds of your computer and a second drive dying at the same time are low, but not zero.
Right.
At a third drive, odds are even lower, but still not zero.
Right.
Yeah.
Before I forget, if you go to asknick.com/backups backup.php, I think it is, or there's a link on the Soundbites webpage. If you use that link to get your pCloud, I get a couple of pennies, and I'm always appreciative.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Pat.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
And we often say, check your backup.
Always.
To make sure it's working. We had one poor customer. He lost his Quicken file, so he brought in a stack of CDs back when you backed up on CD.
Remember those days?
Every single CD, we put the first one in, and there was a shortcut to the Quicken application burned onto the CD. And we have dread in our hearts. Every single CD was a shortcut to the Quicken application. Not even the data file, the application. And the problem is, you click on that shortcut, it points to your main drive, and it opens your file.
So you think it's
backup. You think it's working. Yep. Yeah. Nope. Sorry. Try it on a different computer.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to be very careful about your backups, and you do need to test them regularly. Look, I know that's a pain.
Yep.
I was a systems administrator for 20 years. I know what pain is.
How many total computers did you have?
Yeah, hundreds.
Yeah.
And every one of them needed to be backed up, and every one of those backups needed to be verified every day. So I get it, but you have to do it. And you only have one computer to do it, and so stop complaining. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ken from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ken?
Hi, fellas. I'm glad you're doing well. And question about text messaging and receiving it. Not on your local device, which would be a phone per se, cell phone, whatever, But I see there's things on the web that you can go out and get phone numbers. I'm not crazy about free and that type of thing. I'm just wondering if you have any ideas as to if it's valid, a good idea, a bad idea, and are there places where I could pay for this, say, to have somebody text, to send me a text message to that?
I use a thing called Text Magic, which lets me send out texts, not receive them. I'm not paying for that, but send out texts, and they cost about a quarter of a penny a piece. So, you know, they're not free. You can get a Google Voice number for free and then use Google Messages on the web to send and receive messages from your regular phone number as well if you have a Pixel phone. And there are other companies that...
Even an iOS, too.
And an iOS, too. And there are other companies that will sell you a phone number that you can use to do text messaging. So they're out there. There's a lot of them. Like I said, the only one I've ever used is Text Magic. No, I used another one before that I didn't like, and I wish I could remember the name, but it was years ago, maybe a decade ago, and my brain isn't that good anymore. But yeah, they are out there, and they are usable. And depending on how much texting you do and whether it's personal or business, it can be well worth it to you to use a product like Text Magic or one of the others.
You can, going back to TV Tropes, you can even get a burner phone, you know, $10 for a dumb flip phone and pay by the text message, prepaid. You load it with $25 of text messaging, and that lasts as many texts as you want.
The last time I did that, I bought a burner phone, which at the time was like $15. It came with 5 minutes of voice and three text messages, which was more than enough to sign up for a Google Voice number, which I use to this day, and I've never paid another penny for the phone.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can. There are lots of ways to do it, Ken. And I can't, you know, give you precise numbers because I've only ever really used Text Magic and Google Voice. But they are out there and they work.
Okay, sounds from the description.
I have run into a couple of times where a text factor notification system doesn't work with my Google Voice number.
That's true.
It won't take. It's called Voice over IP because it's sending a text messages over internet instead of over cellular.
Right.
Which is why it works on the web. Mm-hmm. And occasionally you might find a security two-factor code program that doesn't like it.
Right. There are some that I've tried that simply will not send a message over to a Google Voice number or any of the VoIP things, and there are lots of them. So, but.
So then you go back to buying a real burner phone,
right? Mm-hmm. Right. But if what you're mostly doing is sending text, then you know something like Google has turned off the ability to programmatically send out text through Google Voice because it was being abused. Significantly.
Surprise, surprise.
There is a pay voice service.
There's a paid voice service.
Part of Google Workspace that you can do
that. Right. And you can do it through Google Workspace. And again, like I said, you can use something like Text Magic to do that. So if you're sending out a lot of texts to people, you know, if for example, you have a service that sends out alerts for certain things and people are paying you to do that, then you can factor in the cost of a quarter penny a text message to them as part of your cost. But if you're doing it as a hobby or for free or for whatever, then it's either going to cost you a few bucks or you're going to have to figure out a way to do it free.
Okay. I think based on what you just described, but I'm not... At least at the moment, I'm not thinking sending. I'm only receiving. And from the sounds of it, what Steve mentioned about the system that's actually sending out the tax, especially if it's for verification,
right,
like two-factor authentication. It could get kind of dicey based on the way it perceives where it's sending it versus, you know, the opposite, sending a text.
Right.
So I'm probably going to look at a just a normal, what you guys refer to as the burner phone that's still out there and available pretty much everywhere.
Yep.
And go from there. I just thought I'd ask, you know.
Yeah. No, perhaps it's
something I didn't know.
Yep.
Most of the cell carriers also have an email gateway. So you can do...
A lot of those are broken, though.
Phone number at text.att.net for someone on AT&T. You have to know... So if you're sending a text, you have to know what their carrier is. But that's often something that works as well.
Well, what I'm going to receive, I will have to talk to the entity that's sending it to validate... the back end of what you just described.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And go from there, because I could end up buying a burner phone per se and doing all the work and then find out, the system doesn't communicate because it doesn't understand it or whatever. Also, I have to provide that number at the very least to make that work if I'm doing it for two-factor authentication. Otherwise, it won't work at all because it's looking for the phone number I gave it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Not the right number. So that part of it I'm clear on. But as usual, you guys are a wealth of knowledge, and I just want to thank you for all your expertise and the fact that you're even there today, you know, on a holiday.
That's right.
I'll leave you with a bicentennial moment, so to speak. Everybody who's listening, who's still listening, we're near the end of the show here for these guys.
Yep.
If you happen to have a few bucks, please give it to them.
Thank you.
They deserve it.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ken.
Like Dave always said, you stop at the jazz festival and throw a buck in there for sound bites, they wouldn't have to ask us for nothing. So
that's right. If everybody did, we'd be good. Thank you, Ken.
All right. You guys stay well, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Ken.
Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And Ken is right. We fell short on our pledge drive, and so we could certainly use a few bucks here, a few bucks there.
And that's, again,
the Jazz Fest is coming up in like 3 weeks.
Yeah. And that's the other thing folks don't realize. You know, it's a holiday weekend. We could be home with our families. And where are we? We're in the middle of a Saturday. Hauled ourselves out in this rain.
I almost want to say, fortunately, it's raining today, so the launch was scrubbed.
Oh, right. So, you would have been there.
Yeah, so tomorrow on Monday, we're going to be launching at Geneseo. Night launching about 8:30 tomorrow night.
But, we take the time out of our lives, the three of us, not getting paid for it, to come down to the studio on a holiday weekend to present the show to you folks.
Oh, and speaking of holiday, what about lounge tomorrow?
No lounge tomorrow night.
No lounge tomorrow,
No lounge tomorrow.
I wouldn't be there anyway.
Spend some time with your family.
Indy 500.
Indy 500.
So spend some time with your families this weekend. We'll do the lounge again next weekend. We did it last weekend. We'll do it again. We're keeping it up. We're doing it on Google Meet now. Check the website, the lounge website. There will be no meeting tomorrow night, however. But we're there every other. Steve and I are there every other Sunday. So join us next week on the lounge. It's pretty good.
Maybe that's a Sunday I can join you.
Yeah, we would love that.
Well, it's before it was a matter of work.
Right.
And now it's a matter of, I got my granddaughter staying with me.
I understand that. And family always comes first.
And to understand, folks, she's only now, matter of fact, she just turned 3 months old.
3 months old.
So she demands a lot of our attention, and I'll gladly give it to her.
Oh, yeah. Don't miss a minute of that.
Oh.
That's not.
Oh, I don't.
Believe me, don't miss a minute of that. But yeah, because they grow up. I don't know how we stop them. They grow up and eventually go off on their own.
Well, it's like my grandson now. You know, all of a sudden his dad will sit, Hunter will go to him, call Grandpa, call Grandpa. So he's got to put me on video chat.
Oh, sure.
And he puts me on video chat, and I'm talking to him for a minute, and all of a sudden he sets the phone down to go off and play. And I'm going, Hunter, Hunter, where are you? Bye, Grandpa. Okay.
We're done.
He's only 3 years old, but, you know.
When Bart Simpson called Australia to see if the toilet flushed the opposite direction and then left them on hold while he went.
Yeah, I know. It's a great time, and I cherish every moment of it.
Oh, sure. Nobody begrudges you those times. Believe me when I tell you that. but, yeah, so if you're looking for a way to send lots and lots of text for a business, there are opportunities, but doing it from for an individual is not as easy as it used to be. Verizon shut down their gateway. T-Mobile has limited their gateway significantly. I don't know about any of the others. Anyway, we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Good questions this week. Very nice. And I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Listen, it is Memorial Day weekend, so whatever else you're going to do this weekend, please take a moment to remember the reason for this weekend and remember those who laid down their lives for our freedoms. I know it's all about burgers and beer this weekend, but take a moment to remember that. In the meantime, we'll be back in just 166 hours. So be good to one another, would you, for Penn State?